Hello, hello to the podcast Agroecology World and this seventh episode. This is your host, Rob Clouson, a.k.a. Dr. K, and I want to personally welcome you again in joining me on this podcast that's being made while on world travels with my wife, Skye. It's been over 2 months since my last episode. The hiatus was due to the fact that we've been in the travel mode, having just finished back-to-back tours with Intrepid Travel, which took us to Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, and Thailand. And wow, what experiences we have had of those peoples and cultures. Now we've finished those tours, and once again, I can return to producing episodes for you. As always, the intention of my podcast is to share with you some of my meetings with outstanding practitioners and communities of the agroecology and sustainable food systems in the fascinating countries that we're visiting. My goal for this podcast is to introduce you to the actual folks and places so that you can hear from their own voices of their ideas and experiences, keeping it informal but informative, and light but enlightening. This episode continues my exploration of how the science of agroecology is very much a critical part of the agriculture movements throughout Southeast Asia that are striving to ensure food sustainability and security. Asia is the home of ancient civilizations with long traditions of agriculture, as well as countries firmly in the modern times addressing food needs for their growing populations and economies. In case you haven't done so already, you may want to listen to episode 6, which began this exploration. In particular, there are two organizations that I'm using to guide me to identify the locations, the scope, and the impacts of agroecology projects in Southeast Asia. One is the Agroecology Learning Alliance of Southeast Asia, and two, it's the organization called Towards Organic Asia. Both of them have websites with a wealth of information about grassroots projects and agroecology in all of the countries of this region. In addition, they sponsor workshops and provide resources for these practitioners and communities. I wholeheartedly recommend that you check them out. I'm very excited about this episode, also because it's my first episode on the theme of economic agroecology. For example, the subject of this episode is the Laos Buffalo Dairy near the ancient royal capital of Luang Prabang in northern Laos. This dairy is a self-described social enterprise, which we'll learn its meaning and application in this episode. As an introduction to this episode, I thought you'd appreciate getting some background information about economic agroecology. For example, one, as described in my earlier episodes, agroecology is the holistic study of agroecosystems, including all environmental and human elements, and providing the knowledge and methodology for developing best practices for a sustainable agriculture that achieves the following: A, environmentally sound; B, socially equitable; and C, economically viable. Two, economic agroecology evaluates the ecological consequences of agriculture methods on the economic scale in order to provide sustainable agriculture systems. As explained in the 2014 proceedings of the FAO International Symposium on Agroecology for Food Security and Nutrition, a conventional economic lens is not adequate for agroecology. Rather, the wider socio-economic effects of agroecology must be taken into account. Far from a narrow agronomic concept that is only meaningful at the crop or farmer's level, agroecology takes a fresh look at many levels of food systems, how they are organized, and how they could be improved to enhance food and nutrition security. Three, to this end, the broader perspective of economic agroecology compared to conventional agriculture economics expands the definitions of economic resources and recognizes five types of multiple assets of agroecosystems. These are A, natural capital, B, social capital, C, human capital, D, physical capital, and E, financial capital. Number four, also to this end, economic agroecology applies alternative approaches to economic development, including but not limited to economic development using community microloans, value chain investments, market regulations allowing for branding of differentiated agroecological products, and social enterprises. Five, I want to define the term social enterprise because it's relevant to the interview of this episode. To this end, I turn to the organization Nonprofit Enterprise and Self-Sustainability Team, which promotes social entrepreneurship globally. A social enterprise can be described as a business created to further a social purpose in a financially sustainable way with the following attributes. A, it provides income generation opportunities that meet the basic needs of people who live in poverty. B, locally based social enterprises are uniquely qualified to transform low-income, excluded, and environmentally vulnerable communities. These enterprises are on the ground, have the trust of the communities, and have created businesses aligned with their best interests. C, they're sustainable. Income earned from sales is reinvested in their mission. They do not depend on philanthropy and can sustain themselves over the long term. And D, they are scalable. Their models can be expanded or replicated to other communities to generate more impact. For those of you who want even more information in greater depth about economic agroecology, I highly suggest two sources of information. A, the Journal of Agroecology and Sustainable Food Systems, and B, the book Agroecological Economics. Now, before we jump into this episode, I also wanted to provide you with this background information from the website of our guest, Laos Buffalo Dairy. One, we are a socially responsible enterprise consisting of a commercial dairy and production facility to make products such as yogurt, cheese, and ice cream for local and overseas customers. Two, this socially responsible business is funded, owned, and managed by foreign investors and two Lao nationals. We work in conjunction with local Lao villagers and provide the following benefits. A, local farmers receive a new source of revenue by renting their buffalo and pasture land required for the dairy and the production facility. B, improved care for buffalo and their calves and a breeding program to improve calf survival rates is provided. C, community members who will be employed by the business in the dairy, production, and administration will receive new income and skills. D, workshops are conducted at the dairy to provide more practical experience for teachers and students from the Northern Laos Agriculture College. E, internships are provided in the production facility for local women in order to acquire skills and work experiences to give them access to the tourism job market. And F, in conjunction with the Sophanaluvong University, the business is a partner in an initiative to turn waste products into biogas and train local farmers on how to implement this in their own homes. After a short musical interlude, we will listen to my conversation with one of the founding members and CEO of Laos Buffalo Dairy, Susie Martin. I was able to visit this dairy with my wife by taking a fun tuk-tuk ride out of the town of Luang Prabang. My visit to the Laos Buffalo Dairy location took place in mid-May 2019. Hello, hello. Welcome to this episode of the podcast Agroecology World. This is your host, Rob Clusen, aka Dr. K, and I'm sharing with you the voices of the people and places that are implementing more sustainable food systems using ecology-based best practices and community-based approaches. Today, my travels have taken me to the country of Laos and to the beautiful city of Luang Prabang and its outlying areas. I'm sitting with the CEO of a very interesting social enterprise, Susie Martin, at their location. And I'm here today because I just found out about some of their, the scope of their social enterprise in dairy. Susie's going to explain to you more about it in depth. I've just been treated to a personal tour of their operation here. And again, I'm just super amazed about it. And I'm so glad I have a chance to bring it to my listeners of my podcast. So right off the bat, I'm going to hand this microphone over to Susie, ask her to introduce herself, give us an idea of where are we and what the goals are here and who she's doing it with.
Thank you very much. So yes, my name is Susie, and I am the CEO of Lao Buffalo Dairy here in beautiful Luang Prabang, Lao. So located very close to very beautiful Kwongsi Waterfall. We came to Lao about 4.5 years ago, and we started the farm around 3.5 years ago. And our goal is to use buffalo milk for the first time ever here in Laos, although water buffalo have been used for a very long time in Laos, ploughing rice fields and as a source of meat. They have never been used for dairy before, ever. And so we're working with local farmers, renting their buffalo, their female buffalo, to use the milk to make into a variety of products, cheese and ice cream, and working with the farmers to assist them with the health of their buffalo, looking after their calves, and a breeding program.
Thanks, Susie. And so sketch out, describe to us your model of how you're approaching your social enterprise. We've talked a lot about your background in business and how you're bringing that to this enterprise, and that's really such a crucial skill to bring to a project like this. And really interested in learning about, as long as you've been working on your social enterprise here, who are the collaborators that you've been able to make connections with? And I guess in many respects, what's that process like in a country like Laos, where you're not only the infrastructure challenged, but at the same time, you're actually starting something that didn't exist here before. So you're really stretching the capacity and the resources that the country has.
Thank you. A few parts to that question.
Yeah.
I guess first I'll talk a little bit about the social enterprise and how it came about, and where the business approach came into play. We came here as tourists about 4 and 6 years ago, and we saw all the buffalo, and we knew about buffalo and mozzarella. What we didn't realize, and we actually traveled to Sri Lanka, where they have a lot of buffalo and they make a beautiful yogurt curd. And it was very delicious, and I ate it every day I was on holidays there. When we came to Laos and we saw all the water buffalo, again, 6 years ago, we thought that the same thing must happen here in Laos. And that was when we discovered that actually there's no culture of dairy. It's not really ever been part of the diet. We are now the only buffalo dairy in Laos, but until 2 years ago, we were actually the only dairy in Laos. There's now one cow dairy just outside of the capital, Vientiane. So originally we had hoped, we came here after, I guess, a little midlife crisis, from gave up corporate life, we thought, for just a year. Came here, we were running a little guest house. We wanted to source some of this beautiful buffalo milk and make yogurt for our guests. And we started talking to our friends and discovered that there really was a complete not a comprehension about milk. In fact, a lot of our friends thought that milk came from plants because of things like coconut milk and soy milk, which they had access to. And we went with a little YouTube video to a local farmer and thought we could all learn together how to milk a buffalo, because again, that wasn't our background. But we had forgotten to say that the mother would have had to have had a calf for milk to have started. And so, of course, there was no milk that day, even though we all had a good laugh watching the YouTube. So we then did a little bit of research into why buffalo are in Laos. Originally, they were here for working in the rice fields, and more they're here for meat. Over time, buffalo have become effectively a walking insurance policy. They're worth about $1,200, which is the average annual salary. And if someone is sick and has to go to hospital or is getting married or going to university, they can sell the buffalo. But owning a buffalo or any animal can be quite difficult. There's diseases endemic, there's not a lot of veterinary support, and during the dry season, as animals are generally just allowed to walk around looking for their own food, there we go, there's our tractor going past right now with the grass. there's not enough, often not enough food for buffalo during the dry season. So for a lot of farmers, it can be quite hard work to raise their animals. So we came up with the idea in Laos, they use the males for meat to sell and they keep the females to have more calves. So the female, from a business perspective, was effectively an underutilized resource. So we thought if we rented the female buffalo from the farmers, then they would get an extra income, and we pay approximately $100 every time a farmer brings a buffalo to us, which is not quite a monthly salary here, but it's now an additional income. And during the time that the buffalo is at our farm, we vaccinate the animal, we have a milking program for about 6 months, but we don't separate the mothers and the calves. We only milk once a day in the morning by machine, and the baby drinks from the mother for the rest of the time. And during the 6 months that they're at the farm producing milk, we also have a breeding program. And that was actually something we do in collaboration with the agricultural department, because they had hoped to start a breeding program to improve the genetics. The genetics here had come under pressure because there's a greater demand for meat, both here in Laos and in China. They were selling so many of the boys that it caused inbreeding. And so some of the issues that come from that, such as lack of fertility and smaller size. So we have a breeding program here, which benefits the farmer because the farmer owns that calf from the breeding program. In addition, in Laos, unfortunately, quite a large percentage of calves will die if born out in the village. It can be as high as 40% by the age of 6 months, whereas on our farm, that percentage is much smaller. So a farmer will gain in income, vaccinated, well-fed animals, a better mortality rate or a lower mortality rate for calves, and better genetics for the buffalo. So when the buffalo leaves our farm, she's around 2 months pregnant again. Her and her baby go back to the village, integrate back into the village herd. And when mum is 8 months pregnant, she comes back to the farm and the process starts again. In addition to our collaboration with the agricultural department, obviously the people we deal with the most are the local farmers. We work with about 200 farmers across 20 villages, and they bring their buffalo here. And we do free workshops so that they can learn some tips and hints on how to look after not only their buffalo better, but we've expanded the program to include other animals such as pigs and chickens. And we work with the Northern Agricultural College because a lot of our team, of which we have about 35 full-time, were graduates from that college, but they didn't get a lot of practical access resources. So they come out to our farm about once a month for practical training days to add to their studies. And lastly, one of the big issues that they have here in Laos is malnutrition. 44% of Lao children are chronically malnourished at the age of two. So we're now working with the provincial health department to start a nutrition program showing farmers how to milk their own buffalo and to be able to use that milk to cook with rice, which is very popular here, to make that rice more nutritious. And of course, that way you don't need electricity or refrigeration or transportation, and you can just use that milk and the rice to feed your families.
Sounds very, very amazing and beautiful. And interestingly, because in my past career as an extension agent, working with people, I'm seeing parallels. The core group, you're not from Laos. You're bringing resources and ideas to Laos. You're incorporating to all the community, like you've just described. In my past career, I was lots of times working with people not from the agriculture community. So there's definitely some rough edges there for new ideas to be accepted by the local community. And I'm hoping that my audience can see those parallels too. You don't have to necessarily come to such a place like Laos. That it's really these ideas that you're using can be used almost anywhere. Partnerships, thinking outside of the box, have the business model, all these things, very, very useful things to do. So maybe following up on that, you're and I know you're familiar with the SWOT analysis, and we've touched upon some of that already, but I was wondering too, your core group, the skill sets that you brought to this project, and then now your staff and administration here at the farm that you've been able to bring into the project, how's that going in finding the skills that you have as you get further into this project? And I guess then the follow-up would be what are the skill needs that you're becoming more aware of and how you hope to overcome them.
So there's been a fair few challenges. The team that we have now, as I said, we have 35 full-time team, but we have worked with specialists. Originally, of course, the main thing was buffalo. That wasn't our skill set, and that was what we were dealing with every day. So we've had a specialist from Holland, a Lao specialist, a vet, who had trained overseas and was familiar with dairy. And we've had a specialist from Thailand who focused purely on buffalo, who have helped us. And during that time with our team, not only have we brought those specialists here to the farm, but we can test for things like tuberculosis, brucellosis, and we can do it all here at the farm, give vaccinations, take blood. But we've sent 8 of our team to Thailand. People who had never left Laos have been sent to Thailand for additional training. Our goal, won't happen today, but hopefully, is that we'll be able to have a very competent team, not just in looking after the animals, but running all aspects of the farm, which includes the production of the cheese. So we've had people coming in and training our team how to make the cheese. Rachel, who's one of the other co-founders of the farm, is a chef by trade, but she hadn't made cheese either. So she's had to learn. We've had a specialist cheesemaker come and give her some training, and now we're making sure the rest of our team in production are competent. That becomes more and more difficult as you produce more and more milk, because consistency becomes the key. So that's one of the challenges that we'll face, having the right equipment and being able to do everything at a larger quantity, because if we're going to grow the business, obviously we have to produce more. And the next challenge is the marketing and finding those new places to sell, new markets, because Laos and Southeast Asia are still relatively underdeveloped from a dairy perspective. And we're looking for other markets where a little bit we can sell more product, which means we can bring more farmers in to the model. One of the things we realized, which is why we do these free workshops and work with the Agricultural College, is that the largest contributor and the largest stakeholder in our business are, of course, the buffalo owners, the farmers themselves. And the healthier their animals are before they even come to our farm, then the better that will be for the farmer and for us. And the workshops that we do are really to help with things, showing farmers how vaccinations, feed, and that requires, you know, we've had a vet here for a year helping to train our team and to help be part of those programs with the farmers. To keep the business sustainable, we've also introduced the tourism aspect so that we have tourists coming to the farm, learning about what we do and helping to generate revenue. And that in itself is a whole business to run that properly and efficiently. And we've had to work with various travel agencies and groups like that so that they'll bring people to the farm. In terms of skills we need, yes, it's being able to scale up the business efficiently and effectively from a production side and from the tourism side. And then the last thing is really our nutrition program that we're trying to focus on now so that we can bring more and more farmers to our farm, show them how to milk their own buffalo, but then also go back into their village and show them how to do it back in the village. One thing to see it, another thing for someone to show you how to do it in your own hometown.
And you showed me or introduced me to some of your volunteers that are teaching English. So I was reading on your website that really, I think just about all of your core group are multilingualists to start out with, but you're actually then teaching the local people you hire to then speak English or whatever you need for your business. Because obviously tourists are going to come in from all over the world speaking many different languages, and that's phenomenal. I think actually you've probably already answered this last part of the SWOT, but maybe something would pop into your head that you haven't had a chance to say. So the opportunities that you already had identified to start this thing off, and then I guess additional opportunities as, you know, now that you've got a few years of being at this, how you see that as to helping you achieve the goals that you had. And then of course the other side of the coin is the threats and being in agriculture, I do know that sometimes change is not the quickest thing that happens. And just as well as there's outside influences that are coming into the picture too. But at the same time, there's room for everybody, right? I mean, at least that's what I always like to say. It's not that we're all fighting for slices of the same cake. The cake is getting larger.
Yes.
Yeah, so, and I know you've already touched upon a lot of this, but if there's anything else that you wanted to add to the opportunities and threats.
And from the opportunities perspective, we would very much, once this business is set up and profitable and everything's coming to fruition that we've been working on for the last 3.5 years, there would be wonderful to, as we grow our markets, to then be able to replicate this in other parts of Laos, but also other parts of Southeast Asia where they face the same issues where water buffalo aren't being used so much for ploughing rice fields anymore, but they're there. There's something that farmers have as an asset, but they could be using them more productively. And in Southeast Asia, you do have growing tourism as well, so there will be more demand for things like dairy products, both from international visitors, but a growing demand within people in Southeast Asia. So those are definitely some of the opportunities that we see. But first things first, we have to make sure we're getting it right here. In terms of the threats, yes, I mean, one of the reasons we specifically stayed with buffalo, and a lot of people said to me, why didn't you just bring in cows if you wanted to do dairy, was, I don't know if for the rest of you, but in my local supermarket in Australia, it's $81 a kilo for mozzarella. So that seemed like it was a good niche business to be in the medium to long term. And that cows don't really love it here so much. It's a pretty hot place and it's not necessarily the right forage. So we specifically wanted to go with an animal that likes the environment, and importantly, the environment likes the animal, and that the local community would benefit from immediately because of the income that we can pay for the rental of buffalo. But there are obviously threats as more businesses open up. You find that it's a lack of access to water. We know there's obviously farmers who are growing rice. We need water to grow our pasture. More tourist operations, they need water for various things. So it's sharing and making sure that that happens and is managed properly. That can be a real challenge. Obviously the climatic differences and changes, that's a challenge for the whole world. We use organic methods here. We don't use fertilizers, so we're trying to do our bit in keeping that all together. And we're not using, I guess we're not doing industrial farming, because we do keep the mothers and the calves together, and it's part of the local culture. So those sorts of threats, all of a sudden you have big industry come in, that's something that we have to be aware of.
Right, right. Just want to check this, make sure everything's okay. Yep. Okay, well, Susie, thanks so much for giving me this time to help increase the awareness of what you're doing. It's totally inspiring, totally. I have to tell you right off the bat. And I think my listeners will also be inspired by it. And so at the end of my episode, I'll put the contact information for you so that people can get in touch with you directly for any... Well, what I'm thinking is maybe people want to come and contribute somehow, you know, volunteer, fundraising, whatever. What kind of opportunities do you have for people to support what you're doing? And if there's anything else you want to add, it's, you know, maybe under the category of future steps, future things.
Yes, there's lots of ways people could help us. Come to Laos, it's a beautiful part of the world. Come and visit and come and buy an ice cream. That's a nice, simple way to start. In terms of volunteers, we have volunteers helping us with our English lessons. It's wonderful to have people with agricultural experience to come and new ideas and to training and best practice with our team. From revenue raising, we particularly from the nutrition side of things, because that doesn't produce a revenue for the business per se, but it is, you know, something you just have to do in a country where people have access to literally a walking protein source and children are malnourished. You want to be able to connect those dots. So to have people to help us go into more villages and show people how to take a resource they already have and not only get a healthy, we call it a healthy buffalo, healthier people project. And anything that can help to, you know, set up a milking crush for a farmer in his village that can be used by the whole village doesn't cost much by our perspective, but it does for someone here in Laos. To be able for our team to drive out to some of these villages which are hours away, covering the cost of petrol and all those sorts of things, so that more and more people, there are 750,000 buffalo in Laos. I certainly don't need them all at my farm, but they could be a great source of highly nutritious, lots of protein and calcium and vitamins for children to be getting access to every day for free, effectively.
Fantastic. Yep. Food for thought, everybody. So after a short musical interlude, I will be back with you. Well, there you have it. My conversation with Susie Martin at the Laos Buffalo Dairy in the Luang Prabang region. Done when my wife Sky and I visited the lovely country of Laos. I hope that you found it as informative and inspiring as I did. If you want further information about and to contact the Laos Buffalo Dairy, please check out their Facebook webpage and their website, www.laosbuffalodairy.com. And last but not least, I again want to acknowledge the artists of my theme music selections for this episode of Agroecology World. That is the song Once Again by the group Hang Massive and the song Everyone Sleeps in the Light by Joaquin Cooter. A footnote to this acknowledgement is that apparently my theme music selections are only heard on the Anchor website of my podcast. Sorry, but I don't control this feature. While not essential to the content of my podcast, I do hope you may consider listening to my episodes on the Anchor website too in order to enjoy the music. Happy trails until we meet again at my next episode on Agroecology World from another stop in my world travels. Once again, I really want to express my appreciation to everyone's efforts in becoming regular listeners and spreading the word about the Agroecology World podcast to your friends. Your participation as an active listener is helping me achieve the goal of my podcast. That is, the free exchange of ideas and contact information for worldwide groups that are leading the transition to agroecology and sustainable community food systems.